Today's show is being brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, believers in good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Oh, I like the way you do.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. Today, we're talking about a dish that I love. And it's one of those rare, really, really tasty, really good foods that you can eat a lot of and then feel good afterward rather than gross or bad. So, and it's, you know, I have a long list of foods that do the exact opposite, but this one is, you know, gaining more popularity. In fact, there's a new cookbook out just about it. It is called The Pho Cookbook. Easy to adventurous recipes for Vietnam's favorite soup and noodles. It's by Andrea Nguyen. She's on the line right now. How are you, Andrea?
I'm great, Kathy. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks so much for joining us. I think you were last on this show a few years ago for Asian tofu.
I think so. One of, you know, my favorite food groups.
Yes. You are a veteran cookbook writer. Your first book was Into the Vietnamese Kitchen. You've written about dumplings, banh mi, and now pho. So congratulations. I'm really excited about this book. I hear that pho is sort of like the new ramen, right?
Well, you know, it's like you and I both know, that, and many other people know this, there are a lot of noodle soups out there that Asian people enjoy.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, a lot of people think, well, ramen's like the go-to Asian noodle soup, but they're thinking more about pho these days. And I hope that a lot of people can fit both ramen and pho into their lives because they're different soups.
You know, I think that reading about this pho in your book, I didn't realize just how rich and fascinating just talking about one single, and it's actually a family of dishes, because as you explained, pho can refer to the noodle itself, the rice noodle, as well as the noodle soup that we know of. But there's so many fascinating and political stories about, first of all, its creation, then its adoption, and then its appreciation all throughout. And I was just sort of joking about pho being the new ramen because you responded very thoughtfully and articulately to an article that created a controversy that was called Pho is the New Ramen or something on bonappetit.com. So
I did. And, you know, it's like I don't understand why people can only fit one Asian noodle soup into their lives at a time.
Yeah. Or into the public, you know, fad of foods or something.
Because, you know, these are dishes that have not been fads for, you know, a billion people over the ages. More than a billion, several billion probably, if you count, like, you know, over time.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, when we talk about Asian food, people do tend to think of it in terms of being, you know, new and
it's on my radar
and
now.
Trending.
Yeah.
But for the people that, you know, that they've grown up with these dishes, like you and I have, you know, I think about the Taiwanese beef noodle soup that
yes.
you have in your book, and then pho for me, and ramen for others. You know, it's like, that's not trendy. That's what we grew up with, and we love those things, and we have profound connections to them.
Yeah.
So to, you know, to reduce a food that is, frankly, for pho, it's the national food of Vietnam.
Yeah.
So to reduce the national food of a country to, like, hey, everybody, go running to pho. It just seems like
wow.
That article could have gone a little bit deeper. And I think that food is not just fashion. Food is sustenance, and food is story to a lot of people
right.
on this planet.
Absolutely. And we expect more thoughtfulness when it comes to writing and, you know, having media about Asian food. So I really appreciate your response to that. also, I was really excited to, you know, read throughout this book about all the many controversies and arguments and, you know, that pho has inspired throughout the ages. There's, you know, first of all, you were noting in the beginning when you had pho as a college student, it was smattered with all these bean sprouts and stuff, and how that's more of like a Southern or Saigon style preparation, whereas in the North it's more simple and they are like, oh, it's, you know, it should be more pure and just sort of, you know, it's all about the subtleness of the broth. So there's like this regional spar over how to make pho or serve it, perhaps. And then, you know, there's controversies about its origin. Some people think that, and I've heard this myth before, that it is named for pot-au-feu or derived somehow from the French dish of that origin.
Yeah, you know, the thing is that, like, pho came about as a collision of circumstances around the turn from the 19th to the 20th century. So, right. You know, around the early 1900s. Mm-hmm. And so the French were the people in charge of Vietnam at that time.
Yep.
And in the northern part of the country, in and around Hanoi, they started slaughtering a lot of cows. And so, you know, pho came about because there were these scraps that the French
Bones.
Didn't want. And mm-hmm. so, like, these street vendors started cooking them up. So then people think, oh, gosh, you know, the word pho kind of sounds like the
pho.
Word fire. So,
right.
Well, the French were there, then the Vietnamese must have
yeah.
been thinking of pot-au-feu. And it's like, no. A lot of the cooks at that time were of Chinese origin, is my understanding. Mm. And so tracing back to how pho was identified, I actually found like a woodblock print mm-hmm. of a pho vendor, and the woodblock print was produced around 1908, 1909, and the Chinese characters used to identify that pho vendor had the Chinese character for fun, mm-hmm. so for flat rice noodle. And so, like, around 1930, there was, like, this dictionary entry for pho and explaining it as being derived and being related to Chinese flat rice noodles.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow fun turned into pho.
Mm-hmm.
If it was related to fire, then then fire
Yikes.
Would have figured into pho's, you know, name somehow, at least in the Chinese characters. Because
yeah.
back then, official Vietnamese was written in Chinese characters, not in the Romanized form that we see today. So, you know, it's like this weird, it's like this collision of cultural circumstances, as what I say. You know, cultures rubbing shoulders.
Of course.
And so, you know, the French don't own pho, the Chinese don't own pho, the Vietnamese own it.
Right. It is unique to this land and the times, and, you know, nowhere else has it pho. You know,
exactly. Exactly. And as you pointed out, within
yeah.
Vietnam itself, we have regional pho fights.
Mm.
So from between the northerners and the southerners, you know, there's like this thing of whose pho is more pure and whose pho is more fun.
I thought that was whose pho is more fun. Yeah. First of all, I like how you have a helpful, like, little how to pronounce. And I'm not sure if I'm saying it right.
I
did? Pho?
Okay. Yeah, pho. You did.
And the key
is, excellent.
I love that. The key is like the question, you know, and it's in the tone. It's sort of like asking a question. So I'll try.
No, you were sounding like a good native speaker right there, Kathy.
Oh, thank you so much. All right. Something irks me about wanting to apply some other cuisine, you know, that sort of eagerness to say, oh, maybe it was the French. Maybe people are familiar or all too familiar with the circumstances around banh mi and, you know, that's being something, you know, from the French influence because there's a bread, you know, a baguette used. I don't know. What do you think? There's something really strange about that.
There
conclusion.
Is, you know, and we want to define unfamiliar foreign
yes.
things
yeah,
in
maybe.
Terms of things that we understand.
Like put it into a compartment that we, yeah.
Yeah, that we can
grasp.
Wrap our head around.
Right.
And so with banh mi, it's like, oh, it's a baguette sandwich, which is what I called it, you know, when I first started writing about Vietnamese food and into the Vietnamese kitchen. It's called
mm-hmm.
the baguette sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that the baguette is just the shell, the framework, and inside the kind of crazy combination of ingredients is wholly Vietnamese. Mm. And so Vietnam, to understand its history over the ages and its geography, has been this very long country with like the coastline is as long as the eastern seaboard of the United States. So you've got a lot of foreign ideas moving in and out. Mm-hmm. And Vietnam has had resources that people have preyed upon for thousands and thousands of years. Mm-hmm. And so the Vietnamese are like cultural survivalists. They take a look at what foreign ideas are introduced, and then they make the best of it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you get the banh mi sandwiches, and you get pho. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and China's like right there. You know, it's like you can just like, yeah, in certain parts of Vietnam, you just walk across the border and you're in China. Mm-hmm. And you've got all this trade going on. And you've got the French there, you know, and if you trace back long enough, you'll see that the Portuguese were there. There were times that the Japanese and Indian traders were there also. And so, you know, it's like this amalgam of cultures, mm-hmm. and it's difficult to define.
Absolutely. But you do a really amazing job of tracing the origins, the history, the innovations, and the different regional specialties or takes on it throughout this book. It really felt like reading like a definitive Bible or historical study of pho. So,
well, thank you. You know, it was, I frankly initially didn't think that I could write a book about pho.
Right.
Because I thought that, you know, I have two recipes, mm-hmm. That I wrote up, the chicken and the beef, and that was it. But then when I dove deeper, I realized that there was all of this, you know, emotion and protest and art related to pho, and that pho embodied modern Vietnamese history from
the struggle. Which was a tumultuous century.
Exactly. Yeah.
And also, I love that you note that it is always ever expanding and evolving. So the cuisine right now, some of the youngsters, you write, are eating pho that is deep fried and, you know, so forth and inventing. And it's like a sort of living, breathing, you know, cuisine of itself, which is pho. And it's happening. So it's exciting to see those changes going on underfoot.
Exactly. And, you know, that's happening in Vietnam. It's also happening in America. In New York, there's somebody making pho soup dumplings. In L.A., there's a guy making a pho burrito. I've had pho banh mi sandwiches. You know, and in Vietnam, they've got pho noodle rolls. And as you mentioned, a deep-fried pho. And it's just all, it works when all of the essence, the spirit of pho is in the dish. Sometimes things don't quite work, I got to tell you. And so, you know, and it's kind of like at that point, I'm like, that's not pho. That's just a dish with some rice noodles in it.
What about vegetarian pho? Is there a good one?
Yes. Well, you know, a lot of people have said to me when I was writing the book, oh my gosh, vegan or vegetarian pho is like no bueno. It should not exist. Mm. And I was like, we have an entire population of Buddhists in mm-hmm. Vietnam,
sure.
and they deserve pho too.
Eat soup, yeah. And there's seafood pho, which a lot of people don't think of.
No, they don't. And you know, the first time I had it, I write about in the book as it was just like fish that had been poached in beef pho broth, which was just so disgusting to me. The thought of if you were a pescatarian and you didn't know you ordered that stuff, or like lobster pho, which is the same way. But I realized that seafood and pho spices go together, mm-hmm. and so I built a recipe that is 100% like seafood oriented, and it's just absolutely delicious.
Really great. And there's, you know, there's several noodle dishes that are stir fried rice noodles. So, is there like another word for these, or just
right?
Pan
well,
fried,
you know, they're like in the Vietnamese repertoire, you'd consider them to be like dry noodle dishes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so like the wet noodle dishes would have broth with them. But the dry noodle dishes would be stir-fried or pan-fried or deep-fried, and they may be sauced, you know, with a stir-fry, you know, and some gravy kind of thing on top of the noodles, or they may just be like chow fun kind of stir-fried noodles. But the but categorically in the Vietnamese mindset and on the menu, you would see them as pho, like stir-fried pho, pan-fried pho, deep-fried pho.
Like the noodles.
Mm-hmm. Because it's referring to the noodle.
Mm. There is such a world of pho noodles that I didn't realize before I picked up this book, and they all look so good. But we need to cut to a quick little commercial break, and we'll be right back chatting more with you.
Bob's Red Mill has been milling whole grains since 1978. When you mill whole grains, you get all three parts of the seed. You get the bran, the germ, and the endosperm. The germ is only about 2.5% of the kernel. It's actually the sprouting section of the seed, what's going to grow into a plant. It's usually separated during milling process because it contains most of the fat and therefore has a shorter shelf life. So what you want to do once you buy whole grain flour is keep it kind of wrapped so that oxygen can't get to it so it doesn't go rancid. But the good news about having that fat is that it has a lot of flavor. If you want, you can actually buy the wheat germ, for instance, and add it back to flours. But if you buy Bob's Red Mill product, it already has the germ in it, so you don't have to. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
Hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words. We're chatting today with Andrea Nguyen about pho, but first, a quick little message or plug about an upcoming event. So if you're a member of Heritage Radio Network, and we hope you are, we are indebted to you for not only supporting the production, but we are giving you some perks in addition. So all current members are invited to a new monthly happy hour series called Books and Brews. Join us April 12th at Three's Brewing at Franklin and Kenton Greenpoint, where your host of Eat Your Words, yours truly, and my latest book, The Food of Taiwan, will be there. And you can snag a signed copy of The Food of Taiwan, enjoy some beer from fellow hosts at Heritage Radio Network. So check out heritageradionetwork.org/donate to get your exclusive invite today. And on to the pho cookbook. We've been chatting with Andrea Nguyen. Are you still there, Andrea?
I sure am.
Thanks so much. So I wanted to mention something, actually, because as a food writer, podcaster, and so forth, these are actually very tumultuous political times that we're dealing with right now, and I sometimes have a hard time making heads and tails of it. Like, it seems weird to be talking about food sometimes. But I wanted to share that I was really touched by something you wrote, and maybe this is personal. You wrote it on Facebook. Do you know what I'm going to say? Are you scared?
Well, I write a lot of things on Facebook.
Okay, but
sometimes regret and sometimes not. So put it out there.
Okay. Well, you said something that your dad told you. You said your dad told you that in 100 years, nobody will care about Donald Trump or something, but people will remember your pho cookbook. And I think that was so comforting to me to hear. And it's really nice.
You know, my father is 86 years old, and he has lived through a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just like last week when we were visiting. And, you know, like a lot of Vietnamese Americans of his generation, he came to America, and even we like ended up settling in this little beach town where Richard Nixon ended up going to after he left the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and my father has voted Republican for a very long time.
Mm.
But, you know, he has always been someone who has looked at politics in this country as being a place of opportunity for people. And even during, like, the most difficult times for our family in terms of resettling, we always had food and culture as part of our identity and to help us feel really grounded. And so, you know, here he is, and he's, as he's saying, you know, like an old car breaking down because he's getting older,
mm-hmm.
and he's like very perceptive and retrospective in terms of how he sees things.
Wildly wise.
He just suddenly that came out of his mouth, and I was like, you know, you're absolutely true, right? Because, you know, in the long term of things, what we are preoccupied with now, may not really matter all that much, but there are certain things that will remain true, that's culture and flavors and memories. And, you know, food helps us to develop those base points and benchmarks that we can really hold on to so that we have a sense of who we are and what's important to us as we move through, like, difficult times.
And you can really feel, like, throughout each page, like, how important fuzz is to you and your, you know, just everyday life. You write about how you'd first eaten it from street vendors or little small shops in Vietnam. But then, you know, at home, when you were living in the United States, you would often make broth, or your mother would make broth and then recreate pho, because there wasn't too many restaurants at that time that you could go to. So it's something that, you know, you found comforting. Cooking at home and recreating from those memories of Vietnam. And it's just a wonderful, generous ode throughout. And that's sort of like the jumping off point. But, you know, you've done amazing amounts of research that will not be forgotten. It'll stick around. This is like...
Well, thank you very much. You know, I'm blessed to be able to have a publisher that helps me, or lets me write what I want to write.
and make
books that I find to be very meaningful and
authentic.
Long-lasting books.
Mm-hmm. I was actually... let's talk about this characterization you mentioned of pho that involves also an anecdote from your dad. Interestingly, like, so pho is sort of seen as something you don't eat every day, whereas rice is something you do eat every day. So you're saying there's a sort of folksy understanding of pho as the mistress, and whereas rice is the wife.
Correct.
Can you explain
and
that?
There's if you travel in Vietnam and you look around, there are these little joints, food joints, and they'll have a sign out, and it'll say in Vietnamese, rice and pho. Mm-hmm. So gom is rice and pho is pho. And so you'd always see these signs, and it's like, what's that all about? And then I started, like, poking online, and I realized that there were, like, it had the symbolism in terms of rice as being your dutiful wife that you can rely on, and pho is the mistress that you can slip away to. And so, you know, I asked my parents about it, and they're like, well, of course. And my dad, you know, he's standing there, he's wiggling his hips, and he's like, I'm pho. And my mom's like, and you cannot have too much pho because you'll get bored with it.
Oh, ooh. Yes. Well, is that also because you have to slip away to enjoy pho usually from a vendor?
Like, you would go, you know, you can go in the morning, you can go late at night for a chaser. We oftentimes think in the United States that pho is a breakfast food, and it is enjoyed in the morning, and it's fabulous for breakfast, because as you say, you eat a little bit of it, you feel good and not gross, and, you know, you feel like you're ready to go forth with the day and the humidity that's like what you get in Saigon. But you can also have pho midday. It's also a great chaser late at night.
Snack, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's an everyday, all day long kind of food.
Well, I think that it's just a wonderful thing to expand on in your book. You even have pho pot stickers. You know, so many ways to enjoy pho. And, you know, these things, you know, you were just saying that, you know, pho is typically eaten from a stand or a restaurant or a vendor. But it looks so fun and so easy to make at home. If you make a big pot of stock, then you can always just cook some noodles and have something ready to throw together.
Exactly. And you can have, you know, the thing is that a lot of people, if you can boil water, you can make pho, is what I tell people. Really, because
technique.
It's just simmering stuff. And then you have to, like, strain it. But then once you get it going, and home cooks can do this, it doesn't require, like, a long overnight simmer because, frankly, you're not going to be opening a restaurant. You're just making, you know, say, 4 quarts of broth at the most. But you can also use a pressure cooker and make pho in, like, an hour and a half. And then you can also, like, make pho by doctoring up store-bought broth, too. So you can fit pho into your life, is what I'm saying to people.
Cool. So I have the spices to, like, some beef broth that are typically used and then simmer in them. Ah, that's a good trick. Okay, I love how you have, like, also other, like, sort of quickie. So you have a real recipe, and then you have, like, the this, you know, slow cooker or like pressure cooker quick style recipe. There's also a rotisserie chicken recipe, which sounds super easy to do at home. Do you see that more and more people are cooking pho at home?
They are, and they're very curious about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's absolutely fascinating to me because I've been teaching cooking classes about pho for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And most of my people assume that I write for a Vietnamese audience, but I totally don't. Mm-hmm. And most of the people that come to me who are curious are not Vietnamese. They see this as like, this is an Asian noodle soup. They see it as like chicken noodle soup, and they want to understand it and they want to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so refreshing for me because I feel that pho has moved from the margins and is moving right. more into the mainstream.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for helping us helping enlighten us to all the complexities and all the fascinating history of pho and all the iterations of it from a really learned point of view. I think that's a great way to sort of explore it deeper. So I guess anything else that you have in the works? Because you are quite a prolific cookbook writer, and I'm always curious what you're going to do next. So I don't know if you can share.
Well, I'm working on a new book, but I'm also right now busy. I help edit a book about an iconic food writer and by the name of Paula Wolford. And that just came out, and we're very excited about it.
Congrats on that book. So it's Unforgettable, and that's a fascinating story. It's so great that you guys got together. You and Emily Thielen, photographers Eric Wolfinger, I'm sure everyone saw the story in the New York Times about Paula's unforgettable life. So that's so exciting.
Yeah,
it just came out.
It is. And so I'm lucky to be kept so busy these days and getting to do work that I love to do.
Well, I'm so glad you could take the time out to speak with us today at Heritage. That's about all the time we have for today, though. So I hope everyone checks out the pho cookbook. And thanks again, Andrea.
Thank you, Kathy.
All right. We'll see you next week on Heritage Radio Network.
Oh, I like the way you do.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.